Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
What you have just seen, you will unsee.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Streaming, a podcast on the Decoding TV podcast feed. I'm David Chen, and joining me today is my partner in life and occasional partner in podcasting, Joy O'Napping. Joy, thanks for chatting with me today.
You know, unseeing things is a big part of our marriage, so I feel really qualified to to participate.
Each week, This Week in Streaming, we'll cover a show that's new and interesting in the world of streaming. We'll tell you if it's worth watching, and eventually, we review and spoil this and discuss the entire season of the show. Today, we're going to be discussing Silo. Obviously, earlier on Decoding TV, we covered the first five episodes of Silo. But today, we're going to be covering the final five episodes. We're going to start with our non-spoiler reactions, whether you should continue watching the show. And then we're going to recap and spoil everything else. As you'll recall, Silo is a new show on Apple TV Plus based on the book series by Hugh Howey. And it just had its season premiere, or season finale, I should say, today, or like the last 24 hours. If you are a paid DecodingTV.com subscriber, then you are getting this podcast as soon as humanly possible after the finale has ended.
Woo, thank you.
Thank you so much for your support and for being a paid DecodingTV.com subscriber. Joy and I fell behind on Silo, so we marathoned basically the last five episodes this week so we could bring this to you as soon as possible. But of course, if you are not a paid subscriber, you can get Decoding TV for free at podcast.decodingtv.com. And we hope you enjoy this fresh take, even though it's coming to you after the fact. You can also find us at YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram at Decoding TV. And of course, email us. Let us know what you thought of Silo at decodingtv@gmail.com. So let's get into it. Let's start by talking about our spoiler-free reactions to the rest of Silo and whether or not we think people should watch the show. Joy, what do you think?
You know, I'm really torn on this. This is a show that feels like it was constructed for a week-by-week release. And I think you obviously have the choice of how you watch a show like this. I think if you were watching it week-by-week, it was a little bit more satisfying than as a binge watch. So the things I loved about the first half, I still love. I love spending time in the silo. I love the world building of the silo, the visuals, and all of these little tiny details like, oh, they're growing corn. Would they actually do that in this resource-constrained environment? I love that everyone wears rust and teal colors, which is what you and I are wearing today, as a unintentional salute to the world. I assume they do that, you know, because like, the number of dyes available to them is limited. And it's that kind of thing that I really just enjoy soaking in. I am a smug book reader, to borrow a phrase from Joanna Robinson. And therefore, I will say I found the back half a little frustrating because I wanted to hit certain points and we hit some of them, but not all of them. And there's a bunch of stuff that's different from the book. And, you know, I can't separate my experience of this from having been now at this point, I think, a truly smug book reader. When we last talked, I had only read half of the book and now I have read the full book. So I'm at maximum smugness.
Okay. So I think I'm getting it's a mixed bag, Joy. Is that kind of what I'm hearing?
I think for me personally, it was a mixed bag, but I think that doesn't quite translate to what is my recommendation for other people, because yeah. I think I was in a sort of specific circumstance.
So what is your recommendation then?
I think if you like theorizing, if you like world building, and if you like slightly hard sci-fi. I think this is like, it's closer to a thriller probably than truly hard sci-fi, but I do think it's like worth a watch, particularly if you like the visuals.
All right. I'll share a couple brief thoughts. Boy, it's nice to see Tim Robbins on screen again. That's nice. Tim Robbins, very talented actor, you know?
Okay.
Love Tim Robbins. Rebecca Ferguson, certainly also talented, and somebody who is worth our time.
Yeah, it's always nice to see Rebecca Ferguson in a starring role, which I think she's absolutely capable of carrying a show.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, great to see those folks. Silo has some really cool production design and art direction, you know, like kind of looks cool. Like the Silo looks pretty interesting, I would say.
I am giggling because I feel like the world's biggest butt is coming.
There's no, I mean, I unfortunately, I found this show and particularly the second half of the show to be fairly excruciating as an experience. I did not enjoy it. I would summarize my problems with it in two ways. Number one, a problem that I brought up when we discussed the first half of the show, which is that, in my opinion, there is very little here that is particularly well done beyond the central mystery of the Silo, right? Like, so ideally, you really care about these characters and you care about their relationships. And the movie, the show does introduce a bunch of these relationships in the second half, but I found most of these relationships to be really broadly drawn and fairly perfunctory in how they're characterized. And so beyond the central mystery, which unfolds at a glacial pace in the second half, I didn't find there to be much for me to engage with. The second issue I would say that I have with Silo is I found the filmmaking I would describe as inert. I just finished watching The Bear season 2 on Hulu, which you can also check out on This Week in Streaming. And that show crackles. It is alive. Every frame is alive. Every choice feels deliberate, done to maximize the emotional impact of every decision that happens in the script. And this is just people in rooms talking and not framed particularly interestingly. And I think in the first half of Silo season 1, it almost gave us a little head fake because, you know, there was that one episode that was just a set piece around the generator. And it's like, oh, maybe there's going to be like some sci-fi action kind of mixed in.
Yeah.
Maybe like every few episodes we'll have like an action set piece or something. Nope. Like there's basically nothing that is even remotely action-packed that happens in the second. Okay, that's not true. There's like a chase scene, you know, that happens in the second. But it's like, I did not find it particularly thrilling. I'll just put it that way. You know, like there's very few interesting filmmaking decisions, I think. And a lot of the power of the show hangs on the setting. Like this is a cool looking place. It's a cool situation they're in. It's a lot of the props and the setting, the set is are well designed. But from a filmmaking perspective, it's just really, really boring, I found. Just not very many memorable sequences. A lot of people talking. But again, if they're talking, they're framed almost in the exact same way every single time. So I found this to be pretty painful in the second half. Like the first half, I was kind of already having some doubts, but I was like, oh, there's enough interesting stuff here that I'm kind of still engaged. And the second half, it just felt like there was a good 2 out of those 5 episodes of the second half that was just nonstop exposition of stuff I did not care about. And that really, really took this show down a notch for me. So I found it to be quite painful.
Well, I think, again, if you watch it binge, that's going to be an issue. Because also, they're very careful to take in the next episode. You know, they'll re-summarize things that have already been said in exposition. Yeah. So that feels like pretty like repetitive.
I'm going to say if I hadn't watched it binge, I don't know if I could have stuck with it. Like, I think some weeks, quote unquote, of, you know, some episodes would have been so slow that like so little happens in some of these episodes that I'm just like, I don't know if I would have made it all the way to the end. So I'm glad I watched it binge, but it's a fair point.
Well, can I take the recap of the, we've written a little recap of the second half of the season, because sure, I think so, this maybe speaks to your concern, which is like in the first half of the season, yeah, as we talked about last time.
We're going to spoil everything now. So like, just be clear. Yeah. Right? So we're spoiling everything now. Here begins the recap of Silo's episodes 1 through 10, I guess. Here we go.
Well, the first half was paced in a shocking way because so many main characters, people who feel like main characters because they're known actors doing an incredible job with protagonist style story arc seeming, get killed off just like bam, bam, bam. Like just as you get familiar with someone, they exit stage left. And so those were almost dizzying. You know, we saw, I'm going to recap these really quickly. Allison, played by Rashida Jones, who, you know, voluntarily goes out to clean. Holston, her husband, played by David Oyelowo, who is like, you see sort of in bits and pieces spending 3 years trying to figure out what happened to him. And he goes out to clean. George, the hacker, who, you know, unlocked the secret hard drive with Allison's help, is either killed or committed suicide. And then we see the mayor, Johns, and the sheriff's deputy, Marnes, and everyone is just killed in very like sus circumstances. And if that's the first half, then the deceleration from that to the second half feels like such a slow burn as Juliet attempts to like figure out what's happening or why all these things might be related. And I think part of the challenge of the season for me is that the thing I am most invested in is the people I was initially introduced to as the protagonists. And maybe that's because Rashida Jones and David Oyelowo did such an incredible job, or maybe it's just literally because they're the first people we met. But it feels like there's this mystery question mark hanging around them. And often I'm wondering, when are we going to get back to that? Or when are we ever going to answer that? Or did I miss it? And was that answered already from the show's perspective?
Completely agreed. And the show eventually did get back. Like, that was the whole thing. You asked me after episode like 7 or 8, you asked me, you turned to me and you said, hey, what mysteries are you, do you actually care about at this point? I was like, what happened to David Oyelowo and Rashida Jones? Like, that is the fundamental thing I care about. So I don't care about anything that's happening in most of the second half. I don't
and
care
new
about
people
George,
are being introduced. You know, like we meet Paul Billings and we find out Paul Billings has like an ailment, and we meet Paul Billings' family, and we meet his name's not Common's family, but you know, like we meet Sims's family.
And we
spend more time with Lucas, and it seems like there's a romance there. And there's just all these new things happening at a rate that does not seem to necessarily keep up with, you know, all the other people I'm already interested in and I want to get back to, and doesn't necessarily feel like it's advancing the story. I think also in the second half of the season, I personally felt that the character of Juliet was, you know, when you meet Juliet and she's standing in front of that generator, you know, she just looks so badass. She looks like Sarah Connor. I am here for some competence porn from Juliet, you know, for the next 7 episodes. And we kind of get a sense of that when they manage to fix the generator. But then when Juliet becomes sheriff, she has no game. You know, she just like leaves red flags everywhere that she is not doing her job. And she actually probably should be sent out to clean for all the things, laws she's breaking and the way she's rampaging through the silo, trying to get answers that really seem to be motivated primarily around, did my boyfriend really love me? Like, it's actually like, as a feminist, like offensive to me that like Juliet doesn't seem to have an interior set of values about whether she's protecting the silo or what she's trying to do here.
Yeah. And as you say, it takes a character who is highly competent and transforms her into one that is not only quite incompetent, but seemingly has no interest in becoming competent.
Right. There's so many like self-owns where it's like, if you just waited one day or told like a slightly better lie, but you know, she just doesn't seem to have it in her, which I might even believe. But then she has a series of miraculous escapes. It feels like she's always on the run and always escaping things miraculously that just doesn't match with how incompetently she's like pursued the investigations. So I will just say, book Juliet is fairly different on a number of levels that I find, you know, she's still pretty, it's not unrecognizable, but I wished they had done a little bit more there, because I think this really could have been an incredible kind of career-defining role for Rebecca Ferguson, and I think it's not quite there for me. So, you know, in the second half, you know, to finish out this recap, she does eventually learn the truth about what happened to George, and it is at a really awful cost. She has endangered a ton of folks along the way and coerced a lot of people into helping her, but finally gets captured. And when she kind of sees how many people they're threatening because of her, she, you know, agrees to toe the line and say that she had asked to go out to clean, which of course she didn't. And then we find out through the very end that, you know, what all that cleaning actually is about. So
yeah, which we'll talk about momentarily. But I just want to agree with you about the Juliet point. Juliet basically is the main character for the final two thirds of the show in season one. And she is, in my opinion, a very difficult character to root for. This really stretched my loyalty to Rebecca Ferguson, which runs deep.
Yeah, mine does too.
But she, again, not particularly, she goes from hyper competent to not competent in the new job, and she hates it. And then she basically leaves a massive trail of destruction behind her and doesn't feel bad about it at all.
Yeah, there's a callousness to the way that she kind of just harms people and threatens them. And it seems, you know, if it were in service of a greater thing that we all really were on board with, but it's really described more as like she's really damaged from what happened with her family. And so her nuclear family growing up. And so she's really a little bit of a raging bull as a result.
But, you know, I think one of the more stark instances of this is when this guy, you know, she saved this guy's life and then he risks his life to help her in exchange for this watch she's wearing. And then she refuses to give it to him after he's done his job. It's just like, she's just not a nice person. And as you said, a lot of her plot sums down to, did my boyfriend really love me? You know, like that's kind of what a lot of her mission is. Now, towards the end, I think it becomes, hey, we need to uncover the truth about who's actually running the silo, like, and what is going on here. You know, towards the end, I think it becomes that. But for a significant chunk, that's not what it is. It's like, I need to find out the truth of my ex-boyfriend's death and, you know, and whether, you know, what his actual feelings for me were. And that is just hard to get behind as an all-consuming mission that's going to destroy a bunch of lives.
When we don't really know that much or like George that much, you know, like the more time, every time we were in George, you know, I was taking notes in George's story. I was like, ugh, less George, more anything else. Like, literally, show me how they clean the concrete. Show me the mines. You know, those sound like some people spend a lot of time down there.
The
iron mines. Truly anything. Okay, so by the end of the season, I think we know the answers to some of the big questions. So let's take these one at a time. I'd love to hear what you think the answers to these mysteries are. So what happened to Sheriff Holston when he went out to clean? Do you feel like you finally have the answer to that? And why is everyone constantly talking about heat tape?
So one of the things that the show does well is it shows you this vision of the outside world that actually looks nice. But every single time you see the video of it, it looks like it's the same image. And there's a birds flying past and it's like, what's going on there? So there's something about people going outside that's not quite what is being presented, right? And so Holston goes outside. He sees greenery and lushness everywhere. And it's the same birds and everything like that. And what I think we learn in the finale is that when people go outside, they wear suits that project an image of lush greenery and meadows and peace and everything to the person in the suit.
Yeah.
So the people in the silo, they still see what is basically what's actually out there, which is like a wasteland.
Right.
And so this is the silo's way of tricking people into cleaning, because the people outside will be like, hey, you need to see what's out here. So I will clean the sensor so you can actually see that it's beautiful out here. However, that projected image in the helmet is a lie. It's actually a wasteland. And
So when Juliet says the display is a lie for the final time, what she means is the display inside my helmet is a lie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. So then what happens with David Oyelowo's character, Sheriff Holston, is he, thinking that it's nice outside, removes his helmet, but then immediately would have learned that it's actually the air is toxic and that's why he dies, right?
Yeah.
And
manages just to stagger over to where he can see Allison, his wife's body, because he has taken the helmet off. He can see the real world briefly, so he knows where she is. Whereas in the display world, you don't see the bodies. You just see rocks.
But people sent out to clean die anyway, because I think there's something in their suit that there's a hole in it, or it lets in air from the outside. And that's why Holston's wife died, and that's why all the other cleaners sent out to go out there die. And that's why Juliet didn't die, because they patched her suit up with some of that sweet-ass electric tape that was being talked about endlessly during the final couple episodes.
So I think basically, to just clarify this a little bit, I think that's the gist of it. There's shitty heat tape. Yeah. Do you remember? And what has made IT aware of Juliet in the first place is she's like, I keep requisitioning this heat tape and it sucks and it won't work for the purpose of patching the generator. Yeah. So I need good heat tape, and I stole some from IT. And it turns out IT has a different and better quality of heat tape.
Mm-hmm.
So there is, they are using for their own servers and stuff, the good stuff, but there is a shitty version being created in the silo so that they can use it, among other things, to seal people into the suits, knowing that it will fail within X amount of time, enough time to give somebody to clean and not much else.
And not much else. Yeah. And that's why at the end, Sims and Tim Robbins' character are talking, and they're saying, oh, you know, she's not going to make it past this point, you know, because they expect that her suit will be filled with the toxic air and she'll die at a certain point. But that doesn't happen because she has the nice tape. So
when she goes up to the sensor and doesn't clean it, she just drops the little wool.
Yeah.
Tim Robbins' character, Bernard, hightails it out of the cafeteria immediately and runs and like unlocks something. Did you catch that?
I remember seeing that.
He uses his little key that says 18 and he unlocks something that says server room. So do you have any sense of what that's about?
Mm-mm. It's not clear to me. Maybe he's trying to change up what the image is. Like, clearly the image that's being shown to everyone is already being manipulated. So maybe he's trying to manipulate it further. That was kind of my conclusion.
Yeah. Well, I will say it is obvious how much work goes into the cleaning actually occurring in the way that they want it to. And that this is one of the most important things, is this sort of ritual bloodletting ceremony. And so it's obviously like super important for, I'm going to call it like crowd control. Bernard says it, you know, you had a thing you had to monitor the pressure of and adjust if it got too high or too low. I do too. And for me, that is the silo itself. And so clearly this is going to like throw things off.
Totally.
If the cleaning doesn't occur. All right.
You can imagine the kind of civil unrest that's going to result from it, right? Like, because this is the first time, I think, possibly ever, that somebody has refused to clean, right? Like, I think...
I believe
it happens extremely rarely, if it's ever happened before.
In the history of the silo, I think that's right. So now why, this leads us into our next mystery, why is everyone so sus, you know, in judicial and IT and, you know, what do you think, why do they hate Juliet so much?
Well, I don't have any broader sense of it. I mean, when Juliet emerges on the surface, what you do find out is there's multiple silo-esque indentations around her. So what seems to be like a dozen or so silos around her, possibly more, you know, just based on what we can see. And so it's not clear why there are so many silos or what the objective is. But what is clear from the show is that a lot of work needs to go into not only just the cleanings, but maintaining social order as a whole. And making sure people follow the rules and that people accept the narratives that are given to them. And so when you have a character who's out there running around trying to disrupt these narratives or find out who really killed X, it's really going to mess up their plans for maintaining the social order. That's all I got from it. You know, it may go deeper than that. There may be more to it than like in terms of what judicial is actually trying to accomplish. But I don't know that we had that much access to it in season one so far.
Well, there's judicial and there's IT. So common technically works. I mean, Sims, Robert Sims. So, you know, side note, I think this show is filled with wonderful actors. But I think Common's work here, you know, is maybe not the most polished. I often don't really believe him. And it's partly because he's wearing this leather jacket that it feels very implausible that anyone would have, and just looks, everybody else looks like they're in 1975-ish, and he looks like he's from 1995. But he works for Judicial. In theory, he works for Judge Meadows. And in theory, Bernard is in a separate department in IT. But I think what it turns out is that there is this like very secret axis of real power with much more advanced cameras and monitoring and, you know, technology. And that there is a front, you know, of Judge Meadows and having a mayor that thinks they're doing good things like Mayor Johns, and even having a sheriff. They're not even the real law enforcement. Judicial is the real law enforcement. So they are tasked with actually running the silo while there's sort of a veneer of democracy over it.
Yeah. And maybe the fact that Tim Robbins has a thing that's called 18 means like that's the 18th silo. That was another thing that came to mind. But yeah,
I think so that's a very solid, you know, hypothesis. Yeah,
we'll see. We'll see. So.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
All right. Well, another mystery that, frankly, I didn't even think we would get into in the second half of the season is what's the deal with Juliet's family? You know, she ran away effectively at 13 and, ran all the way down to mechanical. And there's sort of an implication that that's like a lower caste, you know, lower class situation that you wouldn't put yourself into. But, you know, what led to her family tragedy and her, you know, terrible relationship with her father?
Yeah. It seems like she believed her father took actions that led to the death of her mom, right?
Right.
And his position has always been that that wasn't the case. And then eventually Juliet believes him during the course of the second half of the season. Is that accurate, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and then they kind of reconcile. And I think this kind of points to some of the challenges I have with the show in general, which is, like, when I see the backstory of Juliet, it's rare that I actually experience it as, you know, this is an organic backstory that I really can emotionally engage with. It just feels like this is what the show is doing to make me care about Juliet. That's kind of, I felt like I was kind of seeing the seams of a show in a way that I don't with a more, with a shows that I think are more skillful. And I think a part of that is because like a lot of these backstories just feel very broadly drawn. It's like, you know, the bad people came and they smashed up the magnifying glass, the symbol of progress. And it just feels like very like clunky, like the most obvious metaphors as opposed to like, again, to compare with like the bear or Succession, like these backstories that these characters have are like messy. You know, they're someone took us fishing and then, you know, Logan Roy flew away and didn't spend the weekend fishing with us. And then some, like, Roman almost drowned or whatever, you know, like, it's like, they're weird and randomizing and they kind of build these characters as opposed to like every single one of the backstories in Silo felt like, it's trying to explain everything about why this character came to be this way. And
so to you, maybe it's a little bit on the verge of cliche.
Yeah. Cliche just feels too strong, but it's kind of more like, I could see the seams, rote maybe would be a word I'd use to describe it, you know?
Yeah.
How did the Juliet's backstory work for you?
Well, everything you didn't like was not in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I do feel like there's an artlessness to it or a little bit of a heavy-handedness. I think what is happening with this backstory of the nuclear family is that this is an attempt to do two things. One is to tie Juliet's story to a broader story about fertility and birth control,
mm-hmm.
which is not in the book. But is a really reasonable extension. You know, if you talk about authoritarianism, you know, like eugenics is right there next to it. So they really blow that out with like the syndrome that is discussed that Paul Billings has, where it maybe is like a Parkinson's-like neurodegenerative kind of disease. And then, you know, the birth control implants and the, you know, who's allowed to make babies and not. You do understand that there would have to be some kind of population control, but it's like so centrally planned down to the individualism or down to the individual. So I think Juliet is also, the second thing is she's being positioned, if you think of like the epic tradition, you know, from Beowulf on down, you know, or from like the Greek and Roman epics, you know, often the hero has a very important lineage. And Juliet's situation is that she is an accident of the birth control failing. That no birth control is perfect. And mm-hmm. so her family was designated do not reproduce because her mother is too curious, right? And so she is really not supposed to produce curious offspring who will potentially rock the boat in the silo. It's all there in the text of this season that they're being bred for relative docility.
Yeah.
And the reason you don't want to have one of these outliers is because somebody like Juliet could really run amok, rise to the role of sheriff, use this office to mostly investigate her ex-boyfriend, but also some other stuff, and really disrupt social order, which is clearly what is going to occur, right? She's being set up as kind of like a martyr Christ figure as she's being like led up the stairs from 144 all the way to level one. You know, she even stops for water. It feels very much like Christ's like Stations of the Cross. People are looking at her admiringly. So they're losing control of the hearts and minds of the silo because of our, you know, heroine figure who then goes and does something truly impossible, which is she makes it beyond the ridge of the hill. So I think that this whole backstory is supposed to illustrate to us the consequences of like outliers and why they are so careful about trying to maintain control.
And the impossibility of trying to do so, you know?
Yeah.
Probably. But I don't know that all that stuff really resonated with me, you know? Like, I don't know that at the end of this, I was like, wow, a lot of interesting questions about control and population control and like China's one child policy and, you know, whatever. I think that the show, in my opinion, got a little bit too up its own ass about its mythology and who are the flame keepers and who are the rebellion and all this stuff. And it just tried to hint and then to some degree answer all these questions by having characters give these very, very lengthy monologues explaining like what is going on with all this past stuff, that it just felt like it became too enamored of mythology to really land those points that you just described in a good way, in my opinion, right?
Yeah, I think the worst is Gloria, the woman who's being kept drugged in long-term care,
absolutely.
You know,
yes.
Who had a book that went to to George's mom, and then the book rattles around. And like, I get it. These ideas are dangerous. You know, the relics are dangerous, and they're dangerous to order in the silo. I think that the question for me is like, have you read 1984?
I have.
Like, spoilers for 1984. But at the end, you know, like, our protagonist thought he was in XYZ kind of surveillance state, but actually he's in a different kind of surveillance state. And it's really, really dark. I think that that is effectively Juliet's journey on this, which is she's like, I think they're trying to control me in this way, and they're trying to control me in this way. So if I solve what's in front of me, then I will have cracked it. But it turns out, like, it doesn't matter how George died. Like, that is actually, to some extent, an irrelevant question. It just motivates her to go off and ask a bunch of stuff that is adjacent to other much more dangerous questions. And I think what we're supposed to believe at the end is, like, she shouldn't maybe have gone, like, there must be a reason that all of, I don't know, maybe I'm like too authoritarian leaning, but there must be a reason that people are going to all this trouble, you know, and that she really has screwed with it. What do you think?
I think the thesis of the show can be summed up in one of Juliet's last little speeches, where she says, you know, if this society requires the deaths of people like George and Holston and his wife and so on and so forth, like, you have to ask yourself whether the society is worth maintaining. And it's kind of the classic sci-fi cliche,
yeah.
You know, Snowpiercer. Like, if at what, yes, we have a civilization. Yes, we have a society. At what cost? And is it worth the cost? Right.
You know, I'm dying because the book asks those questions with, you know, it gets farther in the first anthology book, which is called Wool, which consists of several stories, and we've covered about three-fifths of the book, maybe.
In the show.
In this first season of the show. I'm guessing we'll get to the remainder in the second season, which has been already ordered by Apple TV Plus. I think there's just so much really interesting stuff to answer those questions, but it isn't brought into this season. And so I'm disappointed, partly because I feel like it's 80% of a story to me, that if they had just gone a little bit further, there was a lot more to sit and noodle on in the 1 to 2 year wait between seasons. So I think I'm telling people to go read the book.
Nice. I'm sure that's very helpful for people who have just watched the show.
So, all right. Well, it's a very brisk read. Final question for you, if you don't have any other overall thoughts.
No, go ahead.
What do you think is going to happen next?
So I'm just guessing wildly, right? I mean,
wild or not, you know, based on what you got.
I mean, I think that obviously we see Juliet making her way out of the silo, you know, to another place. She's probably going to uncover A, that there's more silos, and B, the actual reality of where human civilization is at this point. Probably going to try to get some people out of the silo is my guess, you know? So those are just some of my wild guesses.
Okay. All right.
And you already know what happens, right? So you can't guess.
Well, according to the book, but unless they decide to make it, you know, I mean, there's so much stuff in this that is not in the books. The children's book, Guide to Georgia, is not in the book. The Flame Keepers are not in the book. The Syndrome is not in the book. You know, the Lucas is wildly different, you know, so it's actually getting a little hard to know exactly what direction they'll take it.
Are there any things, plot lines, scenes, sequences from the second half that particularly stuck out to you that you really appreciated? I'm just curious.
Well, so this is actually like a thing I wanted to ask you about. There is, in the book, I literally cried at the part where Juliet goes out to clean, and she thinks, it's told from her point of view, she thinks she's going to die. And she doesn't know how, but that's, you know, the mystery of what it is actually like to get sent out to clean. And she goes out and she refuses to clean. but she starts to realize what has happened is that her suit is protecting her longer than it's supposed to. Now, she doesn't necessarily think, oh, that means I can live in this suit forever. But she's like noticing, like, and she figures it out with the heat tape and the note from Harriet Walker's character. The character's name is Martha Walker. Harriet Walter plays her, Walk, from down in, you know, Mechanical, who had mentored her, that she has intervened somehow, or that somehow the people who support her from the down deep have intervened to make this suit better. And the sacrifice that Walk did, she like called in every favor she had in the book to protect. I'm going to like cry talking about it. Not to help her live or to survive it, because no one can know what that is, but to help her survive it a little bit longer and to give her the chance to walk over the hill that everybody dies before they get over, because she wants her to have the choice to have the dignity to die away from the camera and the sensor so that people don't have to watch her body decompose over the next whatever dozens of years. It's so beautiful to me. And I was really, really looking forward to that payoff. And I knew, because we were spending so much time with Walker, that we were definitely going to get there. And especially because people start talking constantly about heat tape. But I'm curious if this landed with you emotionally at all. It's revealed so differently that I think it didn't land in the same way for me, but I also knew it was coming.
I do think it's a nice moment when Juliet goes up above the surface and she starts, like, you kind of learn what's going on through Juliet's perspective, and that's like a pretty effective sequence. I think for me, it was a little bit clouded by the frustration of, I can't believe we had to go through like 5 episodes longer than I thought we needed to reach this point. You know, I really wanted to, this was the central mystery of the show. And to their credit, they got to it at the end of season 1. So like, that's good. They partially solved what's going on. But yeah, it was an effective sequence. I was kind of like, by that point, the show had worn me down a little bit. So I wasn't really in the most open place to receive what the show had to give. but are you saying the show worked for you in the same way the book did, or?
No, I'm saying like it almost couldn't, because the book moved me so much and I was like so primed to wait for this moment and see if it kind of unfolded with the same emotional resonance. And it definitely didn't for me, but I can't tell how much it's because I kind of knew. I will say the book absolutely is written like a thriller, where you can see every kind of 2 episodes or so there would be space for like a pretty clear set piece. And for some reason, they instead decelerated. Like this could have happened at the end of episode 7, and then we could have had a big wild moment at the end of episode 9. And, you know, like it was all there. And they chose to do it this way, with more mythology that they inserted for a reason. And so I'm going to like try to withhold a little bit of judgment on that until like the next season and see how it all comes together. But
yeah, I mean, there's some effective moments in the second half of the season, I think. The reveal that they're being watched by cameras everywhere is like a nice reveal.
Yeah.
And then later on, Tim Robbins shows her how George actually died, which I almost found to be unintentionally comical, because it's like she spent like hours and hours and hours and hours
and wrecked so many people's lives. Lucas went down to the mines for this.
Yeah, like that guy went down for 10 years, got sentenced to 10 years, and it's like, and to try to uncover the truth of George's death. And it turns out he actually offed himself, and they have footage of it. And it's just, those reveals around the camera. Oh, make sure you put flowers in front of the cameras, all that stuff. Like, that was all pretty, like, that's not a nice sort of effective twist reveal, I thought. So that part was good, but yeah, like Billings as a character, It almost is like he was a good character. He was more effective when I didn't know his backstory. Like, he's kind of, imagine if you didn't know that he had the syndrome and he didn't have a wife and kid at home. Like, he was just this guy that showed up and he was kind of by the book. Like, that would be, in my opinion, a more effective character, as opposed to this feels like they kind of put this story in there to make me sympathize with Billings.
Yeah.
And I think you said that in the book, he doesn't even have the quote unquote the syndrome, or there's no such thing as a syndrome, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of these kind of backstories felt very perfunctory to me, unfortunately. They felt like we're doing it because we need you to care about Billings. We're doing it because we need you to care about Juliet's past and her relationship with her dad. And it's like, I feel like that's why you're doing it. And, you know, that's why I'm not particularly engaging with it. Yeah, and I'm bummed that a lot of the things that it seems like you were into the show for, and that kind of intrigued me, like how do you manage a society that lives in one of these things? The show seemed to completely not engage with that at all in the second half of the season. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Like, I have one giant gripe. It's like such a, you know, the comic book guy from The Simpsons, like this is the energy I am bringing to this gripe, but it is speaking directly to what you just said. People start to move around the silo like they have jetpacks, you know, like all of a sudden Common's like in a meeting on 32 and then it's like, go talk to Billings. Billings is on one. So you got to go 30 flights up the stairs, but Common's there like 2 minutes later. Like, wouldn't he just send an email or use the walkie-talkie? Because they're in the middle of a crisis. And then they're like, you know, get Common, Robert Sims, back here. And then bam, he's there. Like, all of that would have taken a day. Or like for Juliet to go down a recycling chute in a ladder, which is really scary. You know, like she goes from 22 to 126. That is 104 levels in what feels like 15 minutes. And I calculated it would take, I think, 6 hours minimum for that whole thing to occur. So like people, it's like all raiders to 22. Like some of your raiders are on like 110. Like, are they really going to take a full day to get up to 22? Like, it's just not a good use of resources. And so I really felt as they got into more chases that they had to cut a ton of like believability about how people move around the silo. The unwieldiness of the silo is itself a central character. Like, I really don't like that they stop grappling with what it means to be in a silo.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just... So, you know. Yeah. Mm.
Agreed. Agreed. And those are some of the more like the second half of the show. Other than the part about, actually, most of the second half of the show could have taken place in any location. It could have been like a building somewhere. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's very little.
It felt like they were all four floors apart.
Yeah. It could have been they were in a town somewhere. You know, I mean, the show does acknowledge there's one point where Juliet's trying to go see Walk, and that is supposed to take a long time. You know what I mean? Like,
So Johns and Marnes take a 2-day or 3-day walk down to the bottom, and then takes another like couple days to come back up. And obviously, it's slower coming back up. And like a lot is made of the physicality and difficulty of moving around the silo, moving information, moving things. You know, in the first half, and it just feels like we really there are just a lot of times that it feels like the raiders are coming. And then we see the person they're looking for is standing like right there in a doorway. And there is a sense of total implausibility to like how people move through this thing and escape each other and evade each other that is only for convenience, like to make the chase work the way they want it to. And that is pretty maddening because, of course, I'm in it more for like the science-y bits.
I will say they did have a nice explanation of, hey, in the pact, it says you can't use magnifying devices and you can't use elevators. You know, those are the two things that the founding fathers mandated for us. And so I like that they at least try to explain why things are laid out the way they are.
Yeah, but then people move faster than as if they had elevators. So, like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, all it took is Juliet gets to the recycling chute and she like is freaking super fit. She looks like, you know, again, like Sarah Connor in her tank top or whatever. She could just have a rope and she could like belay down or something. Or I don't know. Yeah. Like there's some way. I mean, she probably wouldn't be carrying thousands of feet of rope, but.
There was like on The Simpsons, there was a parody of Knight Rider called Night Boat, the crime-solving boat. And there was like, The thing with Night Boat is, like, whenever they're chasing someone, he would always find, like, some body of water nearby that Night Boat could go on. Like, oh, look, it's a fjord. Or, oh, a tributary. Like, you know, they're about to turn into the city. Oh, look, an archipelago that we can ride through. You know, like, whatever it is. That's how it feels like with Juliet in Silo, where whenever it feels like the enemies are about to, the walls are about to close in, it's like, oh, hey, a garbage chute that, or a recycling chute that happens to be extremely accessible to her. Or, oh, hey, look, a fit, you know, like some other contrivance that will help her to escape. That seemed to happen quite. She basically, Juliet is the Night Boat of Silo, is what I'm trying to say, you know?
Well, I'll just say at the end of
an
the day.
An inlet or canal. Those are the other things that, an inlet.
I was so frustrated with Juliet that I'm not saying I wanted her to clean or not clean or, you know, see the world as it is or not see the world as it is, but I definitely wanted her expunged from the Silo because I do think she's very dangerous and not for a particularly good and helpful cause.
Indeed. Indeed. Tough decisions the show made. You know, I do think that the first half was stronger than the second half of the show. Like, first half, you're killing off people left and right. Juliet's being super competent at fixing the generator. Amazing Academy Award nominated actors left and right. You know, like, that's what the first half of Silo was. Second half of Silo was flame keepers and extremely slowly solving the mystery of George's death. And, you know, the ending was somewhat satisfying, but I agree with you that I would have enjoyed it a lot more if it came 3 to 4 episodes earlier, you know?
Yeah. So. Well, you know, they are trying to, I'll say this one other thing thematically that's quite different from the book. They're clearly trying to. So Walker is a male character in the book, played, you know, by a woman in the show. And the flame keepers seem to be very disproportionately women. This whole thing with Juliet's mom, you know, it's clearly meant to create like a lineage of through a matriarchal line how you would actually revolt against this kind of authority, which feels very patriarchal. So, you know, maybe it doesn't like fully land for me, but I do admire that they're trying to go in that direction. Just make her not have a lame boyfriend.
Yeah. I mean, did you like any of the love interests? You know, I liked the other dude. Lucas was his name, right? That was cool. The idea that you would go and look at the sensor and then see lights in the sky and try to figure out what they were and try to map them. That was nice. That's a nice sci-fi touch. You know,
for sure.
And again, that's the stuff that Joy and I wanted more of in the show is like, what would that actually be like?
Well, we will have a season 2 at some point in the future to contemplate these and other mysteries.
Indeed. All right. Any other thoughts on Silo season 1?
Oh, you can know.
I mean, did you find the way that it wrapped up to be satisfying? I think our consensus is basically it took too long to get to where it ended, and then it only solved like some small subset of the mysteries that it introduced, right?
I wouldn't say a small subset, but I feel like it got 80% of how far I wanted it to.
Yeah, I think I largely agree with that. So, all right, well, that's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of This Week in Streaming. Again, I want to mention that if you are a paid member at decodingtv.com, you got this episode a little bit early. Sign up for ad-free episodes and early access to episodes when you become a paid Decoding TV member, and also support this show and help to keep it going. We really appreciate all of our paid Decoding TV members. It's a weird time in TV right now. There's a lot of stuff going on, but there's also no one show that's dominating culture in the same way that The Last of Us was. So your support is really meaningful during this weird, ambiguous time in the TV landscape.
Well, do you mind sharing with people like what else you're covering right now so that they can have a sense?
We just finished covering The Bear on Hulu and did a really supersized episode of that. And we'll be covering Secret Invasion. Already have a couple episodes of that recorded. And we got more stuff coming for you that I am not ready to announce, but later this summer I will be. Yeah.
So intriguing.
Indeed. All right. Well, Joy, thank you so much for the chat. Really appreciate it.
Till next we meet on levels 1 through 144.
Indeed. Goodbye.
Hello again. This is at Joy O'Napping coming to you the week after we recorded our initial take on season 1 of Silo. I think stand by almost everything we said except for one detail, which eagle-eared listener, Matt James, pointed out to us in comments, which is that I got the details about the heat tape reversed. So all that discussion about heat tape, and I got it backwards. I also went and checked the book, and I was wrong no matter which way you look at it. The bad heat tape is in IT and the good heat tape is in mechanical. So either way, I think it's clear that there's two qualities of heat tape and that Walker gets the better heat tape swapped in so that Juliet's suit, which is intended to fail, doesn't. So she lives to see another season. And you can also see why Tim Robbins' character, Bernard, would feel that it's very threatening to have somebody who was really close to George Wilkins' conspiracy theorist and a person who knows about the dual qualities of heat tape that are in the silo actually become the sheriff. How upsetting that might be to the potential social order. But suffice it to say thank you to Matt James. He was actually able to leave this comment early because he got early access as a subscriber to our Decoding TV service. So thank you so much to Matt and all the other listeners who help make this podcast and others like it possible.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.